WCOM Radio. This show may be offensive to some members in our listening audience. Somebody else, stick around. We got more micropowered community-based radio. I'm furious. WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, Carver.
It is impossible to reform you.
I'm not ashamed to admit that I'm an asshole.
You can't really expect the U.S. not to sabotage it. So Washington...
That's my lead for the Republican nomination.
The World Bank, these are the guys that are really preventing progress. So that means our protests outside, they're going to target the 1%.
I'm not ashamed to admit that I'm an asshole, and I'm a drunk, and that I lost my lead for the Republican nomination because I'm stupid. You know, there's something wrong in this country when gays can serve openly in the military. Did you know they can serve coffee at a Starbucks? Or frozen yogurt in a Pinkberry? Gays are allowed to work anywhere they want. All the while, our children are forced to recognize that not everyone celebrates Christmas. Because gays want to fuck Santa, right in his jolly old butt. And that's wrong. Because a gay Santa will just bring a sack of dildos down your chimney. As president, I will fight against our gay soldiers that want to bareback Santa right in front of our children. I'm Rick Perry, and I'm a piece of shit.
Conferences and events that have been taking place here for weeks.
As part of the global Occupy movement, environmentalists from throughout the African continent organized Occupy COP 17 across the street from the main conference. On the first day of negotiations, rumors spread that Canada decided to abandon the Kyoto Protocol, a move condemned by Archbishop Desmond Tutu, among others.
Down with the Canada, down!
Down!
Down with the Canada, down!
Down!
Patrick Bond is a political economist teaching at the University of KwaZulu-Natal in Durban. He helped organize this Occupy protest.
The COP 17 here, we've all decided, given this power balance, is impossible to reform. You can't really expect the U.S. not to sabotage it. So Washington, the World Bank, these are the guys that are really preventing progress. So,
or COP process well. The former Bolivian ambassador to the UN believes global summits on climate change can't produce results on their own.
We need to think in other kind of mechanism. Not only this negotiation in small rooms with delegates that in some way are pushed or they are bought with money or that they only receive instructions. We need to bring this issue to the people.
Over 100 anti-corporate Occupy protesters have been arrested in San Francisco and Washington. It's the latest effort by authorities to break up the movement, which has been digging in across America for nearly 3 months. Artis Lenny Tuchikan witnessed the crackdown in the Capitol.
As far as I could tell, there were around 4,000 people on the street, minutes away from the White House. Over 70 protesters were arrested in total this Wednesday in Washington.
Slow pace of climate change negotiations, thousands marched through central Durban.
I want government to stop polluting and create jobs for people and stop doing what they're busy with. They sit in big conferences spending huge amounts of money while the poor must suffer the consequences.
I'm riding slow. I'm running low, 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 low. Got nowhere to go.
Countries most at risk from climate change, COP remains a vital global platform. But not all voices are welcome all the time. Nigerian environmentalist Nimo Bassi was barred from meetings at the now infamous 2009 summit in Copenhagen.
These negotiators have a very narrow vision of what climate change is all about. They don't have the global picture. They're coming here with narrow, selfish interests.
I'm running slow, 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 slow. Got nowhere to go. I'm riding slow. I'm running slow, 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 slow. Got nowhere to go. I'm riding slow.
I'm riding home. Greenpeace, and the World Wildlife Fund have accused the Obama administration of obstructing the negotiations and have called for the U.S. to step aside and let other countries carry on with the negotiations. Shortly before this broadcast, the top U.S. climate negotiator, Todd Stern, addressed the U.N. conference for the first time. But as he took the stage, a student from Middlebury College in Vermont named Abigail Bora interrupted the proceedings. We turn now to exclusive footage of the disruption.
Your Excellency, you have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Or you will threaten the lives of the youth and the world's most vulnerable. You must set aside partisan politics and let science dictate decisions.
Nobody.
You must pledge ambitious targets to lower emissions, not expectations. 2020 is too late to wait. Abigail Bora.
From which group?
The United States Youth.
Why did you just interrupt this forum?
The United States government does not speak on my behalf.
Young people blocked the road. They were dragging them towards the police cars. One person got nearly struck by a police horse.
She said 2020 is too late to wait. We need an urgent path towards a fair, ambitious, and legally binding treaty. The statement went on to say the U.S. continues to negotiate on time borrowed from future generations, and with every step of an action forces young people to solve the quickly exacerbating climate challenges that previous generations have been unable and unwilling to address.
Which is known as the lobbyist street. People were protesting what they see as widespread corruption in the government. Authorities have pretty much cracked down on this Occupy movement against corporate greed and government complicity. We've seen brutal evictions of demonstrators from their occupied locations in California. In New York, police used tear gas on people, pepper spray, rubber bullets, sound cannons. Keep in mind, it's been largely a very peaceful movement. Around 5,000 peaceful protesters have been arrested in the last 3 months across the United States. Probably any country doing that would be internationally reprimanded for violating human rights.
given this power balance, is impossible to reform. You can't really expect the U.S. not to sabotage it. So Washington, the World Bank, these are the guys that are really preventing progress. So that means our protests outside are going to target the 1% in the United Nations delegations and the whole multilateral system that's in display here. And say, yeah, this is part of what people around the world are furious about, a 1% destroying the planet, the people using financial gimmickry like carbon markets, and all of the things Occupy has raised around the world are being discussed here.
It's all about. They don't have the global picture. They're coming here with narrow, selfish interests, which would not even fly with the citizens of these nations.
For much of the last 15 years since the Kyoto Protocol was signed in 1997, much has rested on the positions of China and the United States. The US never ratified Kyoto and is reluctant to commit to internationally binding targets unless the developing giants do as well. China says it might. India says it won't.
That's where most of the countries of the world are getting together again to negotiate some kind of climate change treaty. Well, last time this took place in Copenhagen, it was front page news day after day. Now, barely a front page anywhere. In fact, the whole climate change debate seems to be off most of the media and political radar. Why is that? And what are likely to be the consequences of that? Now joining us from Washington is Daphne Weishan. Daphne is a fellow at the Institute of Policy Studies in Washington. Thanks.
You know, it's a very discouraging moment because actually things have gotten very serious in terms of the climate science. We know that we are in the worst case scenario, the scenario that scientists said was the worst case, that was sort of the upper level of projected emissions. The pace of emissions and the increase in greenhouse gas emissions in the Earth's atmosphere has vastly surpassed their expectations.
Well, what are some examples? What are examples of what you're talking about?
Well, the Arctic is the prime example where it is melting decades ahead of what was anticipated, that we're expected to be ice-free within the next decade in the Arctic. This was a scenario that scientists anticipated perhaps by 2040, 2050, maybe even the end of the century, and it's now happening in the next decade. We are seeing a much faster increase in temperatures than was anticipated. And of course, all you have to do is look at countries like Pakistan or Thailand to see the some of the consequences of the most serious rainfall that is expected to flood things. Look at the Horn of Africa, and you can see some of the drought. Now, all of this affects the climate change. Of course, you know, it's hard to unpack all of the data, but virtually every climate scientist in the world says that not only has climate change begun, it is accelerating much faster than anticipated, and we really only have a few years, about 3 years until 2015, to reach our peak emissions. At that point, we need to be on the downward slope. Heading down to zero.
U.S. Special Envoy for Climate Change, Todd Stern. Thank you.
Hi, thanks everybody. I think I'd like to make
in the government. Authorities have pretty much cracked down on this Occupy movement against corporate greed and government complicity. We've seen brutal evictions of demonstrators from their occupied locations in California. In New York, police used tear gas on people, pepper spray, rubber bullets, sound cannons. Keep in mind, it's been largely a very peaceful movement. Around 5,000 peaceful protesters have been arrested in the last 3 months across the United States. Probably any country doing that would be internationally reprimanded for violating human rights, but that doesn't seem to be the case when it comes to the United States.
Downstream is a conference that took place in the days leading up to COP17. It focused on the emergence of unconventional oil exploration, such as Canada's tar sands. This year, the conference brought together anti-oil delegates from Nigeria, Israel, Madagascar, and Congo-Brazzaville. McDonald Stainsby is a Canadian activist who organized the conference.
I believe COP17 is going to be a miserable failure. I hope that it is officially a failure, because what I believe is that there's likelihood they will try to do the same kind of thing they did last year, which is pull a very last-minute bribery scam on some of the poorest countries that have some of the worst situations to sort of rope them into an aid-based reliance on mechanisms that are completely false.
within this COP process, the US is the single biggest obstacle to progress.
Look at the Horn of Africa, and you can see some of the drought. Now, all of this affects the climate change. Of course, you know, it's hard to unpack all of the data, but virtually every climate scientist in the world says that not only has climate change begun, it is accelerating much faster than anticipated.
Convened on Capitol Hill on Tuesday, December 6th to occupy congressional representatives' offices and demand that they represent the interests of the 99%. Among their demands were calls for jobs programs, higher tax rates for corporations and the wealthy, an end to foreclosures, and for representatives to be held more accountable to their constituents and less controlled by powerful interests on Wall Street. Shawnee Smith traveled to Washington from Chicago with a delegation of labor and community groups. She says herself and other protesters came to the Capitol building to advocate on behalf of their communities and confront a growing set of economic pressures and perceived lack of political influence.
It's important that we tax the 1%. We bring gainful employment, living wages, jobs to the 99%, as well as house the 99%. And it's important that we begin to invest in infrastructure. We need the extended unemployment benefits. We need to reinvest within our communities and create jobs.
The ongoing events in Washington were organized by the SEIU Labor Union, as well as a number of other labor and community organizations. Much of the demonstrators' demands and language mirrored that of the recent Occupy movements. New York Occupy Wall Street participant Jesse LaGreca says it's important for the occupation movements to expand into the political arena to engage in and challenge standing decision-making processes.
To me, I see this as phase two of Occupy Wall Street. I really feel that, you know, we're trying to change the country. We're trying to do the right thing for everybody, not just the wealthiest people in the room. So we need to be able to exercise our political power. And I see that the point is not to sleep in tents, although it's important to occupy public and private areas. We need to challenge political power and challenge the power of vast economic resources. So to me, I think we need to articulate our ideas into the laws that we want to change and the change that we want to see. And I think that everybody should be a voter. I think everybody should be using the little political power we have to affect real change.
For many of those present, unemployment and home foreclosures were among the most pressing issues affecting their communities.
Outside the conference center, where talks will soon enter their second week, they delivered a petition demanding fast action to the UN's senior figure here.
Thank you for coming.
Countries worst affected by climate change, the time has passed for fine words.
With the Durban negotiations seemingly unlikely to make any real progress, civil society groups like these are preparing for the worst. There are many people here who feel the negotiating process has run its course, that the only voices politicians should be listening to are the people's.
At that point, we need to be on the downward slope, heading down to zero by 2050. Unfortunately, we're nowhere near that, and what the International Energy Agency suggests as a scenario is one that's really quite horrifying. It suggests that we may see an increase of 11 degrees Fahrenheit, or 6 degrees Celsius, by the year 2100. Now, that's, you know, that's just a scenario that no one has anticipated, and yet that is essentially what the IEA, which is a fairly conservative body, has put forward as a likely scenario given the current emissions.
Now, when this was being talked about a couple of years ago, hitting 2 or 3 degrees was considered more than dramatic. Much of the world would be flooded, much of the world would be turned into desert just based on hitting 2 or 3 degrees. You're saying they're now saying it could be 6 or 7?
Yep. The International Energy Agency has said that essentially we are on track to a 6 degree rise in temperature by 2100, not a 2 degree rise, which was the upper limit. Now that's 2 degrees Celsius, of course. That was the upper limit that scientists said was the limit that we should avoid reaching. Unfortunately, we are on track to exceed that fairly soon.
Okay, so if you look at what's happening in Durban and you look what's happening particularly in American politics, it's not a lot. The sense of urgency that seemed to be there a couple of years ago is gone. So why?
You know, it's puzzling to me. I think all of the various NGOs the non-governmental organizations that are working on this are frustrated because there's a feeling of exhaustion, that the public is exhausted, that politicians are exhausted, and really we've reached a point in time where urgent action is required.
the young woman, the Middlebury student, Abigail Bora, said we need an urgent path towards a fair, ambitious, and legally binding treaty. Mr. Stern, as you pointed out, increasingly at this conference, the perception is that the U.S. is blocking any substantive progress towards legally binding agreement on reducing greenhouse gas emissions. 16 CEOs of environmental organizations in the United States said the same thing, that the U.S. is becoming the major obstacle here. Can you talk about the perception, as you've described it, of time out until 2020, when many of, for example, the African nations and the island nations are talking about they could be seeing very serious devastation? You yourself just pointed out there's a growing consensus here that the U.S. is blocking progress in any kind of serious commitment to a legally binding mandate here.
What we're seeing here in the United States with the Occupy movement, with the resistance to the tar sands pipeline, the expansion of this pipeline from Canada's tar sands, the Keystone XL pipeline, these are the kinds of grassroots movements that I feel very hopeful are actually going to provide the building blocks for the kind of climate justice movement that we need to build in this country to move us away from the disaster scenario that the IEA and others suggest we're headed towards.
Olivier Hendricks of Massachusetts was laid off from his job as a steelworker more than a year ago, placing him in a precarious situation that he and many others say has only worsened with the policies of representatives like his state senator, Scott Brown.
As an unemployed worker right now, I have had my house foreclosed on illegally by the banks, so I'm fighting to keep my house. Right now, my unemployment has ran up. What does Scott Brown do? He votes against the extension of unemployment. You know what I mean? So as far as an unemployed person is concerned, these are the kind of pressures that we have on us.
I lost my job. Our family home has been between forbearance and foreclosure. Since I lost my job, I've been in between underemployed and unemployed. These are things that, particularly within minority communities, hit the hardest. Underserved communities, we are hit the hardest. National unemployment rate is at 8.6% as reported, but in my community, it's almost 20%. When you talk about foreclosures, I live in Calumet Heights in Chicago. There are up to 10 foreclosed homes on one block. This is unacceptable.
Few representatives chose to engage with the protesters or respond to their demands. The Take Back the Capitol movement has planned several more actions for the rest of the week, including a march on K Street targeting powerful lobbying firms.
For example, the Maldives, a country that's disappearing under the water, who, to demonstrate this a couple years ago, held a session of Parliament under the ocean in full scuba gear to show that they were disappearing as a result of climate change, decided to, at the very, very 11th hour last year, sign on as a result of blackmail and pressure to have a lot of loans cut off and have funding actually go towards them on other levels of mitigation. How do you mitigate having your country become the newest Atlantis? It doesn't really have a mitigation to it. But that blackmail procedure happened at the very end of COP16 in Cancun in order to make it appear for countries like the United States and other of the world's biggest, well, Canada for certain, biggest actually blocks to getting anything done around climate change, had to have something that they could put out in the newspapers and say, yes, we're actually doing something around climate change.
Won't keep global temperature rise to manageable levels, and though it won't say so openly, the United States can't offer more.
They need to say that given our domestic political situation, there is no conceivable ambitious treaty that could come out of this process, no matter what China, India, and Brazil put on the table, that our current Senate would ratify in the medium term.
The people!
So the UN framework lumbers on at COP17 in Durban, with protesters demanding politicians listen to the people instead. Pablo Solon believes outright failure here would be better than a weak agreement. At least then, he says, it'll be clear the system needs to change.
There is some good news, however. You know, I think what we're seeing here in the United States with the Occupy movement, with the resistance to the tar sands pipeline, the expansion of this pipeline from Canada's tar sands, the Keystone XL pipeline, these are the kinds of grassroots movements that I feel very hopeful are actually going to provide the building blocks for the kind of climate justice movement that we need to build in this country to move us away from the disastrous scenario that the IEA and others suggest we're headed towards.
Everyone is downstream shielding new projects aimed at moving away from crude oil and towards oil sands and shale, like Canada's tar sands, are spreading to new countries.
The extraction, the costs of extracting, the costs of using these humongous pieces of machinery, these gigantic refineries, was all too much before oil was below, say, $70 or $80 a barrel. After those prices rise, all of a sudden it becomes, you know, tremendously profitable. And so it's really only been in the past 10 years that we've actually seen tar sands development really take off to the pace where it's currently at right now. When we first went back there, we thought it was a lake that the companies were dumping stuff into. It turned out to be a tailings pond.
COP17 here, we've all decided, given this power balance, is impossible to reform. You can't really expect the U.S. not to sabotage it. So Washington, the World Bank, these are the guys that are really preventing progress. So that means our protests outside are going to target the 1% in the United Nations delegations and the whole multilateral system that's in display here. And so, yeah, this is part of what people around the world are furious about, a 1% destroying the planet and people using financial gimmickry like carbon markets, and all of the things Occupy has raised around the world are being discussed here by the General Assembly and by all the allied organizations like the Pan-African Climate Justice Alliance. Hey.
Have staged
a series of actions in recent days, calling on world leaders to agree to a just climate deal. Early this morning, Democracy Now! Got word of an action by Greenpeace International, and we got an inside look behind the protest. We're walking along the beach in Durban, South Africa. Kumi Naidoo, the head of the executive director of Greenpeace International, and Bobby Peak of Groundwork, are walking toward a protest. It's not clear what will happen. It's about 7:30 in the morning. We already see the signs outside the hotel. Kumi, can we ask you why you are out here right now?
We're here to say to the negotiators that they should listen to the people, not the polluters.
Become Radio, Furious George, doing the Furious George show as we do every Thursday around 10 o'clock to spotlight some egregious thing going down. As you've hopefully noticed already, what we've been spotlighting, the stuff going down relating to the Durban protests against the climate pact and the inaction by the giant multinational corporations that are our government. And also, wanted to spotlight some other good news, including the fact that Mumia was spared the death penalty after prosecutors dropped a 30-year bid for execution. So we've spotlighted him and included his voice in many different things before, but I definitely wanted to just take a second to acknowledge that. Some other great things happening this week, as well as the Occupy protests happening in D.C., across the country, and a number of other things, including relating to occupying houses that are about to be foreclosed on, and some other just amazing stuff that's happening. So if you like what you're hearing here on WCOM Radio, that's probably because this is all about, the same spirit and theme that we are hopefully I'm trying to do through the Furious George show, which is going to talk about liberated ideas, liberated music from a liberated people. And definitely want to say that Lumia is not liberated yet, but it's a whole lot better than where he was, folks. So along with those themes and other globalization themes, we used to call it the global justice movement. I am going to just spin a little bit more music here, maybe pop in a couple sound bites here or there. But if you want to learn more about the Furious George show, go to furiousg.blogspot.com, and you'll learn about all the other things we've spotlighted, including every week of the Occupy protests since they started week one, September 17th. And a number of other things. That also includes some underground hip-hop, like here in the background, this weird mix by this dude, half of the Laser Sword combo. So this is called the Low Limit Mix. I play it all the time. Low Limit. And we also played some stuff that I'm going to send you away with from this dude called Lou Kid. I've just discovered that I've actually been listening to him through some of these other mixes that we've had from not only the Low End Theory and some other stuff, but just a number of albums seem to have he's gotten his music into. So I'm going to send you away with his latest from the album Chord, this last song on the Chord album. And also, want to just say, if you want to help support WCOM Radio or, Micro Radio, wherever you happen to be, if you're downloading this show off the podcast and you're somewhere else, support micro-powered or independent radio, global news for people, not corporations.
people, not polluters. So if you want to do that, you can check it out at WCOMFM.org here for our station or wherever you happen to be. There's indie media, independent media stations online that you can link into, low power FM radio stations that you can check out that have been a part of the long process of liberating and democratizing the media, which actually started way back, you know, well, media, you know, corporate, anti-corporate media has been going on for a while, but Democracy Now and all these other things that we have on WCOM, but specifically the independent media process and a lot of the micro radio processing that was happening around the WTO protest in Seattle, which ironically concluded this week 12 years ago. Sorry. So we've been, you know, a part of a process for 12 years, at least stretching back to the WTO protests in Seattle, where a lot of the anti-corporate, anti-globalization, you know, democratized movements that harmonize labor movements and environmental movements and student movements and youth movements, like in many ways what's happening behind the anti-climate, you know, the pro-climate justice groups that are fighting the bogus climate pacts that are being manipulated by the U.S. and all the stuff that seems to be interrelated. If you want to learn more about it, go to WCOMFM.org for our station. Or you can check it out at furiousg.blogspot for my stuff. You can also call us at 929-9601. We'll spin something. And if you happen to be on one of our webpages, especially the WCOMFMwebpage.org, WCOMFM.org, please, you know, kick in some cash, especially if you're local. And if you're downloading this show from somewhere else, kick in for some of your local broadcasting. Because, you know, just to keep the lights on, this is all volunteer. We do this because it needs to be done, but it's also fun, a little cathartic. Because I'm furious, and I'm a Micropower Radio DJ. So, stick around more Micropower Radio. I'm going to send you away with a little bit more, and then we'll see what happens in the next hour. Definitely, thanks for listening to the station. We appreciate it. I'm furious.
Was convicted and sentenced to death for fatally shooting Philadelphia police officer Daniel Faulkner. During his trial, witnesses testified Abu-Jamal saw his brother scuffle with Faulkner during an early morning traffic stop in 1981 and ran toward the scene. Police said they found Abu-Jamal wounded by a bullet from Faulkner's gun. Faulkner was shot several times and a gun registered Abu-Jamal was found at the scene with 5 spent shell casings. For 3 decades, Abu-Jamal argued that racism on the part of the trial judge and prosecutors led to his conviction. 2 years ago, the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with a lower judge who set aside Abu-Jamal's death sentence after finding jurors were given confusing instructions that encouraged them to choose death rather than a life sentence. The U.S. Supreme Court then ordered the court to re-examine the decision. In April, that ruling was upheld and prosecutors had to determine whether Abu-Jamal would get a new sentencing hearing in court before a new jury. Well, on Wednesday, Philadelphia prosecutors announced they will no longer pursue the death penalty against Mumia Abu-Jamal. This is District Attorney Seth Williams, joined by the slain police officer's widow, Maureen Faulkner.